Welcome to another rakish episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Guardians of the Galaxy by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. And now, the cast begins.
What up, everybody? Welcome to the 104th episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hello.
And Jen.
Hey.
We are coming to you via Skype again after a one-week break because we had a couple like major life events get in the way. And we try as hard as we can to be here every week. But sometimes, you know, just shit happens. Like, I think 4 months ago, we had to delay one because I was moving, like, right when we were recording everything, and it was a big old pain in the butt.
I know, so, what's up with that, Andy?
I know, I'm sorry.
Plan better.
I'm sorry. But to be fair, I'm pretty sure both of you had better excuses than that. So anyway, this week we're back on course. Episode 104, we read Guardians of the Galaxy by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. It's issues 1-6. I believe. Yeah, issues 1-6. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yes.
So this is one that they're making into a movie, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's these characters.
Okay.
Not all. I don't think all of them are going to be in the movie, but it's this, like, setting. There you go. That's a good way to put it.
Okay. And I think it's a good way to, like, because, you know, when they revealed, spoiler, when they revealed Thanos at the end of the Avengers movie,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh man, how are they going to make this work? Like, you can kind of stretch the audience and make them believe like interdimensional alien invasion, but like when you get down to like cosmic cube and the idea of death and this like random alien dude being in love with death, but he has to get the infinity gems from the Infinity Watch, who is these people from, like, damn, you got to explain a whole lot of shit. But I think if they do it through this team, like, introduce some of those ideas, I think it'd be fucking sick.
Yeah, because this, you know, we only read the first 6 issues, but Thanos becomes a big, he's a major plot point later in the run. So yeah, he becomes very relevant later, so it would make sense.
But so this comic spun out of Annihilation Conquest, which was the follow-up to Annihilation, right?
That's right.
So Thanos is technically dead? Technically?
Thanos is still dead. That's right.
Okay. Making sure I didn't miss something. What with Drax's knife being in Thanos? Yeah.
No. I mean, I can drop a big spoiler if you want to.
No, it's okay. I don't know. I like this one. I am going to keep reading it. Because the run's like 28 issues, right? It's not that long.
Yeah. It's like 20-something issues. And then you have to read a mini called Thanos Imperative.
Ooh, I've heard of that before.
So this story runs up to Thanos Imperative, and then Thanos Imperative is like 6 issues, and it basically ends this series.
Okay.
And that's why there's no Guardians of the Galaxy ongoing right now. So it ran for until about mid-2010.
Mm-hmm.
And it crossed over with some other comics. Like, there's something called War of Kings, which involved the Kree and the Shi'ar and Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a good run. Like, I was looking over as you were writing out your notes, Andy, and I noticed that you had some things you didn't like about the comic. And so, I hadn't read this since it came out. So I haven't read it in 4 years.
Like, you read it as it was a monthly, right?
Yeah, so I picked up back in 2010, I picked up the trades for Annihilation and Annihilation Conquest right before this came out. And so it all made perfect sense to me. It was like this flowing storyline. And I think this is one of the first comics we've read that is very dependent on continuity in Marvel.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why there were probably things that were confusing and didn't make sense, and why it feels like such a slow burn.
There's some things like the team feels, I mean, I guess it kind of fits because they talked about how the team was very rushed and thrown together. And so from a reader's perspective, it feels like the team just kind of jammed in out of nowhere. It sort of makes sense. But I do think if we hadn't read Annihilation just like a couple months ago, I'd be pretty lost.
Well,
I'd be like, who the hell is Gamora? I don't know what the fuck this Drax guy is. The raccoon's cool. Neat. All right.
Well, see, like, another thing, too, is, like, we don't get very much of Groot. He's just in the little planter box, right?
Yeah.
And Adam Warlock's in it all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And Phil Lavelle's in it. And none of those characters were in Annihilation. Well, Phil Lavelle, was she in Annihilation?
No. I think she was.
She had a cameo.
Yeah, I think she was like a side character in the third book.
So, a lot of these characters.
She said hi to Drax's daughter at some point and then left.
Right? She's like, what a moon dragon. Peace.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of these characters are actually from Annihilation Conquest. Groot, Rocket Raccoon, Phil Lavelle, Adam Warlock. All of them come out. They appear first in Annihilation Conquest. So that's why there's a little bit of a jump between it. Okay. So maybe we should read Annihilation Conquest first.
I feel all right. There's something called the Phalanx Imperative, right? Or something like that. I don't know, some Phalanx invasion, and then basically back-to-back bad stuff, and so a team.
Yeah, so basically what happened, the Kree homeworld of Hala was invaded by the Phalanx. Do you know who the Phalanx are? They're actually from X-Men.
Ew.
Mm-mm.
They're
keep talking, David. Keep talking. You got a bottle of water nearby?
They're a techno-organic race that I don't know if they first appeared in X-Men, but they're heavily involved in X-Men. And there's a character from the New Mutants called Warlock, and he is a member of the Phalanx. And so basically they can like control people, and you know, they're just another alien race, and they take over Hala, which is the Kree homeworld, and then they trap it inside like a bubble, like a force field, so no one can get in. So it's kind of like this thing where the people who are left that were there after Annihilation have to kind of be like freedom fighters, and they eventually overthrow them, obviously. And so all these people who were here, like in Guardians of the Galaxy, were involved in that in some way.
Mm.
And Nova was involved in it a lot as well.
Okay. One thing, though, one of the things that we talked about is like how it's such a slow burn, and throwing together the characters with urgency kind of counters that. But, you know, honestly, it doesn't feel very urgent aside from the fact that Adam Warlock is saying, like, this is so urgent. So what about the story previous to this actually makes this team such a necessity right now?
Well, I mean, there's no more Nova Corps, right?
Nova Corps, right. The only Nova left is Richard Rider, it's kind of like when Hal Jordan killed all the Green Lantern Corps, and the only person left was Kyle Rayner. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
And so somebody like steps up and says, "Okay, we need something out there, guys."
But
I mean, that makes sense. It's just it seems like there's something much bigger. And I know they'd say it's a preventative measure, but
well, there's so like the because the so the annihilation wave was from the negative zone, and so they have to like it's like another dimension, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many of them coming through from this other dimension. Like, the fabric between the dimensions is kind of weakening. So that's what Adam Warlock's trying to do, is close off our universe to protect it from being damaged more.
Okay.
That's a pretty neat concept for a comic, because it allows them to go out all over the place. It allows you to just out of nowhere require them to, like, get up and go. It's a really good mechanic for the comic to be starting out with.
Like this whole series, like all, like there's so many things in these six issues that are like little bits of foreshadowing that don't make any sense yet, but all will come together. Like the Universal Truth, this Major Victory guy and Starhawk, pairs in space. It all matters in the end.
So yeah.
This comic has a really big payoff.
Yeah, and you know, you get a sense of that when you're reading it. Like, I did enjoy reading this while I was reading it, but the one thing that kept getting to me is like, okay, let's get something else going here. All right. Like, it's just, it's, I really enjoyed reading this, but it feels like there's a bigger story that they want to tell, and they're really putting a lot of it in there, but it's such a slow burn in these first six issues.
Yeah, see, I think even if we had done, like, a series of episodes on this, we couldn't have done, like, six issues, because it wouldn't have wrapped up, it wouldn't have finished the story in the end anyway.
I mean, I want to keep reading it, because it does seem like it's got a big story behind it, because there's so many little pieces of different things in so many other places, and it's like, just with these first six issues, you get a real good sense that the writers know how all of these disparate pieces come together. Like, there's a lot of shows and comics that you read where they drop a lot of hints, but you kind of, you don't get that feeling that it's part of a grand plan that the writer has. You think they're just kind of doing it, you know? It's just in there. And if it all happens to matter someday, then it happens to matter someday, kind of like Lost. Mm-hmm. Or Battlestar Galactica, the Cylons have a plan. Not really. Come to find out.
Yeah.
But then, like, this one feels like there's all of these pieces, and they know where it's all going, and it's going to get there, but it's a long story.
This one really has a payoff, and if you read the whole series, it's going to be satisfying at the end. Like, basically everything that's happened in these, all the things that happened in these six issues, aside from the Skrull stuff, it all leads you to the Thanos Imperium at the end.
Okay. Well then, okay, let's move on and just talk about what's in this comic.
Yeah.
And I think what's really awesome about a team book like this is talking about the characters, because we've already got a little bit of exposure to Gamora and to Drax and to some of these guys through Annihilation. But is there anybody that, like, got fleshed out that you guys really liked, or anybody new that you just attached to right away? Is there anybody you guys liked or hated, or?
Well, I hate the raccoon.
Oh, poor Rocket.
That
raccoon. What's weird is I find the dog likable. And I know they're meant to be like foils to one another, but the raccoon is just kitschy. He's like Tawny the Tiger, except not as goody two-shoes. He's kind of like smarmy sidekick animal. At least the dog acts like a real character. I mean, yeah. It's a kitschy Russian character, but it's different in its campiness.
Yeah, I mean, Rocket is definitely the comic relief in this series, but he is relevant. Like, things happen eventually. Like, I keep saying that. Like, things are gonna happen.
Well, I think he's relevant here. I mean, they talk about how he's a strategist, but that doesn't seem to come out as much. But, like, you know, when you have a team like this, sometimes it comes in handy to have a demolitions expert. And it did come in handy a couple times. And I gotta be fair, you know, the raccoon thing's a little silly, but it's kind of fucking awesome to turn the page and see a raccoon with, like, a bazooka machine gun. Kind of like, there's six guys on the page, and the biggest gun is in the raccoon's hands.
Yeah.
Oh, he doesn't have any powers. He's not even actually, like, a mutated raccoon from Earth or anything like that. He's like some kind of alien, but he really is a raccoon, but he's not from Earth. Like, his origin's kind of confusing.
Okay.
But he's not like, you know, he's just like one of these creatures that lives out in space.
So then, okay, if you didn't like the raccoon, Jen, who was your favorite?
Probably Gamora.
Gamora?
Yeah, I mean, we knew her from Annihilation, and she was kind of... she was a really hard character.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, she was really unpleasant a lot of the time, but when she was needed, she was there. And she did that same thing here. Like, I think a lot of the humor they try to play off in the first six issues here comes off as kind of a little campy, or maybe a little, like we've seen it before. You know, everyone has kind of the smart-ass lines, and she does the same thing, but then when she actually has to pull through for the team, she shows that her character has developed since we first met her in Annihilation, and that was really cool.
Yeah, and I like that aside from just that moment where she practically sacrifices herself for the team. You know, even though she knows she'll be okay, she's like, healing factor, it's fine, guys. I can go down to, like, a cinder block, and it's cool. But, like, even so, there's a lot of sacrifice involved, even if she knows she's going to be okay. And that really, like, you kind of see her do kind-hearted stuff in Annihilation, but to be fair, I think she came out in, like, one of the worst subsets of the Annihilation side stories. I think she was in one of the worst ones. But it was nice to see her have that development, like show like you said, that when it comes down to it, she will be there for the team. The rest of the time, she might kind of sow seeds of disruption, saying, "I don't fuck, go out and get him. I don't give a shit. I don't care what the hell Boss Man told you to do. Just go off and do whatever the fuck you want."
Well, she's doing it because she knows it's what's best for the team and for everyone else too, and that's nice. Mm-hmm. Because you know she's strong-willed enough to do what she thinks is right, and what she thinks is right actually seems to be the right thing a lot of the time so far.
Yeah, I gotta say, I kind of like, I think my favorite might have been Drax. I mean, he did a lot of really badass stuff in Annihilation, but I think nothing has been more true to his character than when he temporarily killed the entire station.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Because you can just, like, it's perfect for his character because it's the exact thing he would have done, right? As soon as like, okay, there's scrolls here. We've got to figure out how to find the scrolls. His brain is super, like, violent and geared toward death. And he's like, okay, you know it's a scroll when it dies, so let's kill everybody. And the scrolls will find. Easy mode. Except killing everybody is a giant fucking problem. But that comes later. That's fine. Whatever. Scrolls have to happen now. We kill everybody, we find the scrolls, figure out the coming back to life thing, all that, whatever. That's after we find the scrolls. I just like that he's a character of immediacy, and he goes and fixes the problem with the most blunt force object he can at hand at the time. No finesse, no sneaking around. Kill everybody. Temporarily, but kill everybody.
Okay. It worked well.
So what about you then, David?
Well, the easy answer is for me to say I love everyone on this team. Because this comic is one of my favorite comics of all time. But if I had to choose somebody, it's definitely Peter Quill, Star-Lord. We don't get that much of him here because he kind of is the glue that holds the team together. But I love that he's just a guy with guns. And somehow he is the leader of this team of badasses.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that he's like a normal guy out in space. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example in genre fiction that you can compare him to. Where it's just like a, because, you know, he's half some other species that I forget.
But yeah,
he doesn't,
like,
have any powers,
like,
or anything.
Even like John Carter of Mars. I mean, he doesn't have powers, but That's from a different point in time in the genre where just being a human being, like being a human dude, made you automatically better than everything else in the world.
Well, I mean, John Carter had powers while he was on Mars.
Yeah.
Because he took advantage of the lower gravity, basically. But Peter doesn't even have that. He just knows people, and he's good at being a leader. And that's enough to make him awesome. I don't know.
Plus, he definitely has the sickest costume.
Yeah,
that mask is awesome.
He looks fucking rad.
And their fucking uniform is sick. I think that one of my favorite things about the team isn't necessarily a specific character, but the idea of this team. Because it seems like before now, every single, like, galaxy-wide or universal, you know, peacekeeping force is like this organized core, or this organized, like, it's Nova Corps or it's the Green Lanterns. Like, there's got to be some kind of space cop. It seems like there's an idea that you need, like, a giant bureaucracy and cops to police space. It's weird that nobody came up with the idea of Space Avengers before. Or even, like, not even Avengers, like Space Justice League International. You know?
Yeah. But see, the thing is, like, those kinds of teams always have, like, one, like super badass heavy hitter, like there's a Superman or a Thor or something, or a Hulk, right? This team doesn't have anybody like that. Phil Lavelle's pretty powerful, Adam Warlock's pretty powerful, but I feel like they couldn't hang with somebody like Thor, you know, in a straight up fight. This is a team of like moderately powered to completely normal people. And they're doing crazy things, you know. They're doing things that would probably be a challenge to like the Avengers, you know. I mean, we kind of saw a little bit of it in Annihilation, right? Where, you know, they're like Drax kills Thanos, who, you know, that was his purpose in life. But he's pretty underpowered relative to Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Drax is a badass because he's like this brawler and he's a good fighter and he's like cold-hearted and stuff. But he's really not that powerful compared to some other characters that you would come up against in space. Like, for example, a series spins out of this one called Annihilators.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made up of four people at first, and it's Gladiator, Beta Ray Bill, Quasar, and Ronan the Accuser. So it's like these...
That's a team full of heavy hitters.
Yeah. And they form because of something that happens at the end of this comic. I probably shouldn't say it. But it's like they're these complete badasses, and they end up fighting the Universal Church of Truth a lot. But it's so both of these teams are fighting the same villain, and somehow they're both...
Yeah, you can see the clear difference in power level. Like it's stark. And you know, when you're reading this, you don't think about like why aren't any of the heralds here? There's a lot of heralds of Galactus just kind of lying around, it seems. They could really use one. Be awesome if Silver Surfer wanted to join the team.
I mean, Nova kind of gives an excuse about why he's not on the team, but he's pretty powerful because he's got the entire energy of the Nova Force in him, right?
Yeah.
He could probably take care of a lot of these things on his own, but he's too busy. He's got to do his own thing. So this team of galactic leftovers have to fight the battles for everybody. And so I don't know. I think this whole team like dynamic is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's definitely the strength of the comic.
And then I also love, I know Jen hates Rocket. I love the interaction between him and Cosmo because it reminds me of Quark and Odo from Deep Space Nine.
Okay, yeah.
That is amazingly apt. Yeah, and I really did love Cosmo, and I love that he's the security chief, and I love that. That's genius, making the dog the security chief, because then he's just protective of the station and everybody in the station. And of course he's fiercely loyal and protective of it, because he's a dog.
And it's, I think about like the genius behind making it a Russian space dog.
And has the CCCP on the astronaut uniform still.
And then whoever designed him and thought, I'm going to put one of those cones on him too.
Yeah.
He's just such a well-designed character.
Yeah, and then the writing's good too. Like, what are you thinking? Like, they give him the accident in the text too, which is amazing.
And just the way they like him and Raccoon Rocket interact, like when they come back from the Universal Church ship, and he's like, Comrade Raccoon, Mr. Cosmo, and like interact with each other. So there's just, like, this is not, it's not the best comic ever written, but I think it's a sum of its part, you know, it's the sum of its part make such a good, solid, entertaining piece of comics, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's
why I wanted us to read this.
So, okay, there's, as far as I can see it, there's three main storylines in these first six issues, aside from the undercurrent one. And we'll go down the list. All right. So sure. I think the most ripe for discussion is the idea of Mantis doing brain coercing. I want to say, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is the easy one. Like, oh, it's wrong. But, like, I don't know. What did you guys think about that? About Mantis and was it Mantis and Star-Lord who decided together to make this happen, to do it the way they did it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Star-Lord basically convinced her to do it.
Yeah. So what did you think about it, Jen? I'm going to call you out since you've been quiet.
I thought it was a horrible idea on his part. I mean, think about it. You're trying to get people together. You're trying to get them to feel loyal about each other. And of course you can set something up to try to impact that, like put them in a tough situation, for instance, where they actually have to work together or die. But messing with their brains, aside from the fact that it's not terribly moral, is also really dumb in that maybe they'll think later that loyalty that is real was just put there. And I think a few of them mention that at the very end, and they say something like, you know, I was starting to trust you, but maybe Mantis just made me think that. So it seems like the most impractical way to go about it. And again, we get this whole sense of, like, it needed to be done now. There's so much urgency. Throw this team together immediately. At the same time, yeah, they're closing the rifts and they're fighting some, you know, moderately powerful enemies. But it's still, to me, didn't feel so pressing because the main underlying story is kind of still building up for it for us, and we only get bits and pieces of it at this point.
You know, this is going to sound weird, but this part of the story made me think of a chick flick. In that, like, you know, there's always, like, that one chick flick every once in a while that's like, the guy tells a lie to get the girl, but then he finds out that actually he kind of likes her and she kind of likes him, and it's like not just a hookup, but like a real thing, you know?
I think that's every chick flick, Andy.
Right. So then he's like, oh, fuck, but I lied to her. And it's like a big lie, like what he does for a living, you know? Or like, I own a mansion or whatever dumb shit that the movie's revolving around, you know? And it's like the same kind of dilemma, like, okay, do I rip off the Band-Aid and tell him, or do I just try to keep moving forward with the lie and then just say later, oh yeah, I lost my job or I sold the house and then have to move on from that? And I'm like, but you're from Earth, man. Shouldn't you actually know this isn't going to work?
Maybe, I mean, he doesn't see too many tricks.
Moral stuff aside, you know, I could excuse, you know, Drax doing this. I could excuse Gamora doing this because they've never seen chick flicks. They've never been around Earth, right?
Drax, or like, is from Earth.
Well, like a little bit, you know, like, but they're aliens. It's fine. Maybe they don't have dilemmas and chick flick stuff like this in their planet, their home world, you know. But like, come on, man, Star-Lord, you really should know. You should know better, buddy.
I just got this vision of Star-Lord sitting around on a weekend, like, sitting on his couch and watching chick flicks with a pint of Haagen-Dazs, like, weeping.
That's what he's going to do now that all his friends left.
Throwing in the DVD of the lake house.
That's issue number 7.
Issue number 7, Star-Lord watches The Notebook.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this whole thing is pretty underhanded and was pretty stupid of him to do. And the thing is like, the thing that I don't like is we'll never really know if they would have all worked together anyway. Because, like, if you kind of look at what happened, you know, Star-Lord brings them together, but they're doing what Adam Warlock wanted them to do.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of them didn't have anything better to do anyway. Like, Drax didn't.
Yeah.
And I don't think Gamora did.
Drax killed Thanos. Job done. Yeah. Purpose in life complete.
It's time for him to make a career change anyway.
See, but you know, I don't think that it was stupid. You know, I think it was actually not a bad idea. Now, you know, all the morally wrong stuff aside, because let's be fair, it is morally wrong. We can all agree to use a telepath to go in and change somebody's opinion.
Yeah, to something it's like mind wiping Batman.
Yeah, or exactly, as we will find out in the coming weeks.
Yes,
but like, it's not a bad idea, right? And the way he explains it, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, how do you throw a team together quickly, because these fissures are coming up all the time in rapid succession, and you need more people, and you got to get them together, and you got to do it now. Like, how do you make people loyal to each other to the point where they got each other's back, like, in a week? Well, you get a telepath and you just make them loyal. You just make them be loyal. Why not? Just skip ahead, you know, a couple months of building loyalty and just make it happen today. And then maybe they'll just offhandedly think, oh, it's some weird kind of chemistry that just happens to be working for now. And then in a month, they actually do have the loyalty. And nobody ever questions it. Nobody ever brings it up. I mean, once you actually have the loyalty without the telepathing, it's fine. No reason to go back and question it. Why would any of them go back and question it? Like, it's not. I think it's a genius idea. It just sucks that it didn't work out. Well, I mean, it's morally wrong. Don't do this, kids. If you're a telepath and you're listening, don't ever do this to somebody. Like, it is morally wrong. It doesn't suck that it didn't, you know. It's good that they found out, and now they can do the right thing, quote-unquote, the right thing. But it was a good idea. Straight up, it was a good idea.
Wait, so you're saying, like, for instance, if you found out later that that had happened to you, but you were already loyal, you'd be like, well, I guess I'm loyal at this point, so bygones?
No. I'm saying if nobody had ever told them, there's no reason Star-Lord would have to ever tell them. There's no reason Mantis would ever have to tell them. Nobody would ever have to tell them that this happened.
Okay, yeah.
And right? Like, you would never... if it happened to me, I would never go back and question it. Like, I would just think, oh, I guess we just had chemistry to start. You know, kind of like this podcast. I threw this ragtag group together and we just had chemistry from the get-go. I promise I didn't telepath either one of you. I swear to God. But like, you know, like now, 2 years down the road, you know, you wouldn't like reflect back upon it and go, whoa, what the fuck? I was way too friendly with them. Like, really?
I guess, but one is like just hanging out with people. The other is putting your life on the line.
Yeah. There's a clear difference, but
yeah,
I can't argue that isn't morally wrong. But I'm not going to call it stupid. I think it's genius. It's a little bit evil genius, but it's genius.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm. Boom! I won this one. 1 point for me. There's only 3 topics, guys. You guys got to get on this and start winning some points. This is turning into a competitive podcast.
Well, we haven't talked about some of the other things. Oh, so, okay. You win the mantis brain coercing.
I win the mantis brain coercing.
Okay, Andy, then tell us how you feel about Skrulls.
I think that was fucking silly.
Yes, agreed.
Like, how many planets are in the Skrull Empire? Like, how many planets full of Skrulls are there?
Not that many.
Not that many?
Did you read Annihilation?
Well, yeah, there's not that many left.
A lot of them got destroyed by the Annihilation Wave.
Okay, so say there's one planet of Skrulls left. That's 10 billion, we'll say. Right? Yep. 10 billion Skrulls left in the galaxy. You seriously going to waste resources and, like, have a suicide bomber super Skrull go in and take out, like, 8 of them?
Yes, apparently.
That's a horrible use of resources.
But see, the thing is, they're not... So, okay, we read... This is the second Secret Invasion tie-in we've read. We also read the Deadpool one.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So the reason the Skrulls are invading Earth is not because they're like, hey, that's a planet, let's go move there. It's like a religious thing. They believe that they're preordained by their Skrull gods to live on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's manifest destiny.
Yeah, and that's why they even use the term jihadist.
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought that was kind of weird.
Because that's what these Skrulls are doing, is they're motivated by some... They believe that it's a holy war for them.
Huh.
Like, there's
even...
I
never knew that.
There's even... So this was the 2008-2009 Super Marvel crossover. There was... we read Hercules, remember? You guys remember Hercules. So there was a Hercules tie-in where he forms a team called the God Squad. Okay. And they go and fight the Skrull gods.
Hmm.
So that this sounds fun.
Now, this whole story that the thing that happened in Guardians of the Galaxy, I thought was pretty dumb.
I like the idea of an underground railroad.
And Harriet Tubman Skrull.
Huh?
Harriet Tubman Skrull.
Right. I believe that there's pacifist Skrulls, and they're persecuted against, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And they just want to live their lives happily with their own pacifist beliefs. and they want to go live on Earth peacefully and not conquer it, maybe. I believe all that could happen, but I don't know that the Skrull Empire is going to divert resources to stop them when they got a war to fight. I don't know.
I mean, I could see it if the ideology behind it's strong enough, but at the same time, it seems really weird to me, too, that Cosmo was the only one who knew, and he was being brainwiped over and over, because when you have an underground railroad, it's not just, like, one person who knows, who happens to forget it every other week. It's actually, like, a network of people, even in one place. So why was no other single person on this giant space station in on this?
Yeah, I never thought about that. I think you might have won this one.
Yeah.
I
feel like they were like, Marvel was like, guys, we're doing this thing where there's going to be some Skrulls, and we need you to Skrull up your comic a little bit.
We heard you like Skrulls, so we want to put some Skrulls in your Skrulls.
Yeah, and they were like, well, you guys are in space, so you got to do it. And they did, and then everyone was like, okay, let me get to the next page where they're not talking about Skrulls anymore. And so I think that was in these six issues. It's a serious. It's not like it's a low point. It's that it's like, what is the value in this? Yeah. Because I don't think it moves the story forward. At least not the story of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
I want to put forth that it's actually also the climax of this like six issue collection, because suddenly we're like, there's Skrulls. There's a traitor, and we know. From issue one at the end, Mantis said, in 9 months, one of them is going to betray the team. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking, oh, well, there's a traitor. Maybe it's Drax because he's been doing secret things, and there's a secret invasion, and they both have the word secret.
Everybody's so, green.
Yeah, so there's, I guess, a potential that, this could be a really big deal, and then Drax kills every single person on the station, including himself, in 90 seconds, which is just too awesome, and you're like, wow, what's this adding up to? And no, it just peters out because it's actually not a big story point. It's just this thing that's there as a side plot. So, I don't know. It's very silly.
I gotta say, it's not for sure that one of them's gonna betray the team in 9 months, because remember at the end, Mantis says, or somebody says, like, we're moving forward in a different timeline that we're not supposed to be. Right? Somebody says that at the end, so who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
And then, what was the other thing? I was going to say something else, and I completely fucking forgot. So that.
Alrighty.
You know what, though? The whole thing with the Skrulls reminded me of an episode of Star Trek Enterprise. Have either of you guys watched that?
Yes.
No.
Remember the one where he... So there's an episode of Star Trek Enterprise where the captain gets captured and put under trial. And he has a Klingon, like, lawyer representing him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, dude, what the fuck? I thought you were all warriors. And the Klingon's like, yeah, dude, but it's a whole empire. I mean, we got to have Klingon lawyers. I'm a warrior lawyer, but I'm a lawyer. We got to have Klingon accountants, too. Got to have Klingon accounting. You got to have, like, Klingon housemaking. I'm like, okay, well, I guess you got to have Skrull pacifists.
I would like to see the Klingon interior designers.
Yes. Right?
You know there has to be one because every single Klingon house looks the same. Like, there's a Klingon style. And somebody is the dictator of that style, right? Like, there's got to be Klingon interior design trendsetters.
Yeah.
Like the guy who decided, you know what? I'm going to put my Batleth on the wall. Suck it!
We used to keep it in these buckets by the door.
But now it's going on the wall. Right? Like, there has to be that in the Klingon Empire. So there has to be that in the Skrull Empire. Right, like it makes
well, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Remember, we met one of the Skrull mechanics.
Yeah, who turned out to be yeah.
He was a fucking dick, but
yes, yeah. So you're like, there's got to be those people, and I'm sure there's somebody. Like, there's got to be some Skrull accountant somewhere who doesn't really want to go to fight because he's a fucking wuss, right? And would rather just be a pacifist. I don't know. It just seems like it makes sense, and it seems whatever. Jen won this one.
Woo.
Okay. Last point. What is the most awesome thing about the Universal Church of Truth? I'm going to phrase it that way because I think they were fucking sick.
You want to know what's the most awesome thing about them?
Yes, or were they not awesome, if you want to be the lamer of the group.
I think they're pretty cool.
Okay, good.
I love the Cardinals.
Yes, they're so fucking cool looking.
Well, they're also, like, they're like something out of nightmares. You know, these giant, imposing, like, statuesque things with big, pointy knives. And they just chase you around, like, spouting things like, you know, heretics shall be persecuted. I believe! And it's, they don't say anything of substance. They just have this thing that they spew by rote, and then they kind of walk after you slowly.
You know, it reminds me of, I feel like they would fit perfectly in the Doctor Who universe.
Yeah.
I think they would be a good Doctor Who villain. But I think they work really well here, too. I mean, they're like this, they're kind of, you know, they're bad because they're, we know they're bad because they're the antagonists of this comic. But are they doing bad things? Who knows? I mean, I guess convert or die is probably a bad thing to make people do. But
I don't, for me, they feel like kind of a cross between between the operative from Serenity and a Green Lantern. Like, give that operative a Green Lantern ring. Like, because they can do, if I understand right, they can do anything they put their mind to so long as they believe enough.
Right. Andy, if you give the operative Serenity a Green Lantern ring, you just make Jon Stewart.
Hey, that's racist.
Is it?
I'm pretty sure it is. But I mean, like, because the one thing that I love about the operative in Serenity as a character point is that what makes him evil is his complete inability to question his orders. I mean, he believes in his orders and he believes in his government without question. And even if he's doing something that he knows is wrong, he believes that's for an ultimate good. And I think these Cardinals are just like that. They will not question a single thing that the Matriarch says. And on top of that, they have a fucking Green Lantern ring. All they do is say, I believe, and then they get a sword, or I believe, and then they get a fucking hammer. It's fucking cool.
That is awesome.
Fucking scary.
Yeah, I guess so. They have, like, religion-powered constructs. Well, yeah, I mean, it's like they, yeah, that's good, Andy. Green Lantern. Well done.
It's not just religion-powered, right? I mean, they're basically harvesting human energy.
Is it wrong that I can hear a golf clap in the back of my head after that statement, David? Good job.
I mean, they're super grimdark, if you think about it. They're like harvesting humans.
Oh, yeah.
For their faith, which is based on hope. They thrive on eating the hope of other people.
Yes. Like that scene inside the temple ship where they're like harvesting the faith of everybody, like in this giant hallway. And you just see like stacks and stacks of people, like, I don't know, believing.
You know, they're like Dementors from Harry Potter too. A little bit.
You know what that thing inside the temple ship reminded me of? Because apparently this is the night where I make references to other things.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, what do you think?
Are you going to say C'Thun from World of Warcraft?
Ah, no, but that's a good one. I was going to say The Matrix.
Yeah, can see that.
Like, inside the temple ship, they have these giant columns of people just, like, entombed there.
Oh, believing. That part. Yeah,
yeah, okay. That part.
Where I thought just, you meant, like, I was referring to the octopus monster that came out of the battery.
Yeah, that reminded me of Hellboy.
Well, it's like C'Thun too, right, Jen? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. Fuck C'Thun.
Anyways. Okay, so what were you saying, Andy, about the Matrix?
Who won this one? Or are we not done yet?
I don't think we're done with this one yet.
I want to say that I won it already.
Why?
Because I want to fucking win, Dave. Okay, then you go. Why did you like them so much? Because you can't possibly not like them.
I can't?
No, it's not allowed because they were cool. I don't know if you know this, but the Universal Church of Truth is fucking badass.
No, they're pretty awesome. I don't know. They reminded me, like you guys, you said, like, Dementors and all these other things. They also remind me of the Necromongers from Chronicles of Riddick. Which you guys, sounds like you haven't seen that movie.
Yep, not at all. It's on the list.
You should probably get that from your local video store, Andy.
Ooh, I need to pick up Idiocracy, too.
So anyways, we're kind of going off. hot today.
Yeah, well, whatevs. It's been a week. We had a week off, and now we're back, and it's going to take us a while to get back in the swing of it. It's fine.
You can have this one, Ann. You win.
You sure? Good. I feel like I want you to win, though, too, so that we can all have won a point, and then we'll all just be happy with it.
I'm okay with not winning. I don't have to win everything.
Oh, now I feel like a dick. let's call the truce, David, and we'll give the point to Jen.
Okay.
She said something important a while ago, so Jen won.
I can't be winning everything.
No, well, it's a very interesting concept, right? I mean, we compare them to Green Lanterns, right?
Yes.
This goes for any of the Lantern Corps. They all have some emotion that they're powered by. But it's from themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what the Cardinals are doing is they obviously believe. Otherwise, there wouldn't be Cardinals. They mm-hmm. would just be dudes in tubes, like the rest of the church. Now, so they're using other people's emotions to power themselves, which is a little bit different from a Green Lantern. But what's interesting too, and we don't ever see this, is why do people want to join this church?
They believe.
Because convert or die. I would convert.
There's like, you know, when Drax is punching people in front of the faith battery or whatever, it's belief battery, is that what they called it?
Something like that.
They're like normal dudes with cloaks and guns. And then stuff starts to go bad, and they're like, okay, time to teleport out of here.
That was great. Get the fuck out.
And Warlock's like, oh my god, what the fuck?
Yeah, you know, the parallel with the Green Lanterns, I hadn't even thought about doing it for the different colors. Because there is the faith color, which is, I think, just blue.
Well, there it's hope.
Hope, that's right. Sorry, hope.
It's actually interesting because, so the Cardinals say, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. The Blue Lanterns always say... What does the Blue Lantern say? He says something like, all will be well.
Yes, that's what it is. But then you say that, and which is true, that the Universal Truth, they feed from somebody else's power. They take their power from some source, not from within. And that actually is a lot like Larfleeze, the Orange Lantern, the green one, the greed one.
Well, the Blue Lanterns are kind of like that too, right?
Well, the Blue Lanterns support, as I understand it. Like, they can only give power through another ring.
No, actually, that's not true, Andy.
Oh, really? I have not read enough
colors. They can't use any offensive abilities unless there's a Green Lantern nearby.
Uh-huh.
Because, so, they can use their rings and stuff to create shields and things like that. But if there's a Green Lantern with them, they can actually shoot blue. They can do blue constructs and stuff.
Okay.
It's the opposite, right? Because when a Green Lantern's nearby, they can go on the offense and they power up the Green Lantern. But yeah. This way it's kind of other way around.
Yeah, I think it still reminds me more of Larfleeze, and that Larfleeze like kills you and then uses your power. Like you join his ring.
Yeah.
Like he uses you. The same way that these Cardinals are, like, using the believers. They're straight up taking the faith and using it.
Hmm.
Which is a fucking sick idea. I really love the idea of this villain.
It's cool, too. Like, you just gotta read the rest of these. Because you just learn more awesome things about the UTC. Also, they make a pretty awesome team in HeroClix.
That's true. That is true. They are fucking... They don't look like it on paper, but they kick ass in HeroClix. Anyway. So is there anything in the notes that we didn't go over?
Let me see. I think we covered pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Did anyone bring up a point about the thing that we didn't bring up yet?
Seriously, listeners, if you read this with us and had some, you know, doubts about this comic... Read a little bit more. Read like two or three more issues. I promise you it gets much better. The scroll thing was just like... I'm sure they just had to add it so they could tie in with the rest of the crossover.
Yeah, it feels like that. But it also... It's a good comic. I really did enjoy it.
And if you did like this comic, or if you read more and you still like the comic. This writing team does good stuff. They did the short-lived Heroes for Hire reboot that they did in Marvel. So if you like characters like Power Man and Misty Knight, they're good. And then another, Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning have another comic out right now called Hypernaturals. I think it's by Boom Studios. I haven't read it yet, but it's supposed to be really good, and I actually was going to check it out when I go to the comic store on Wednesday. These guys are a good team, so if you like the writing in this, look them up. They have some other good series out there, so yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and rate it. I feel like I'm starting to get silly, so it's time to wrap things up. Okay. David, this was your choice. You go first.
Okay, I'm going to give this a 5, but not for any good reasons.
I appreciate your honesty.
Like I said a couple times in this podcast so far, is that this is one of my favorite comics of all time. And I know it's not one of the best comics of all time, but I love everything about it, except for the Skrull stuff. But, like, it's just such a... See, the problem is, like, we only read 6 issues for the podcast, but I read the entire run, plus both Annihilations, and I've read Thanos Imperative and Annihilators that came afterwards. And, like, I feel like Marvel's cosmic stuff is really rich and is a great... It's a great setting. And I feel like Marvel doesn't utilize it enough. I was really upset. I was pretty sad when this series ended. It wasn't canceled because it actually sold really well. But I was sad when it was gone because I was like, well, what cosmic comics do I have to read? Like, well, I'm going to keep reading Green Lantern, but that's it. There's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel has think about it. They have like characters like Galactus and Silver Surfer, and you know, there's all these alien races out there like the Kree and the Shi'ar, and the Marvel universe, cosmic universe is big, and Marvel just never uses it. We spend so much time watching the fucking Avengers fight the X-Men, and it's like there's Marvel, you have so much you can do, and you're going to make a movie, you better bring them back. But seriously, the writing I think is pretty damn good. It's I think definitely better than most out there. And I think the Skrull thing was definitely an editorial decision by Marvel. Mm-hmm. But it's just a solid comic, and it feels a lot different than other team books like the Avengers or the the X-Men. Mm-hmm. Because with those kind of comics, everything they do is this huge, big freaking deal, and only Captain America and Iron Man and Thor can solve it. But out in space, there's these huge things going on too, and it's got. And look who's solving the problem. It's this.
It's fucking Rocket Raccoon.
And guns, and a green guy with knives, and a green lady with a sword, you know, and a space magician. And it's just really interesting to me, and I don't know. That's completely subjective. And so, like I said, there's not really a good rational reason why I love this comic so much, but every time somebody's like, what should I read? I always say read Guardians of the Galaxy because it's fucking great. So there you go. That's why I'm giving it a 5.
Okay. Do you want to go next, Jen, or should I?
Sure. I'll do it. Yeah.
All right.
Not quite so good as a 5. I'm going to go with a 3. I found this appealing, but it took a while to pick up. Like, by issue 6, I was totally into it. But all the way through 4, I just felt it dragging, and I was like, okay, I know things are going to happen if I get through this, but I have to get through this part. And I think, in part, that was Secret Invasion just butting its head into a otherwise good story. And that was kind of like, well, they can't help it. On the other hand, I feel like it didn't start coming together in terms of narrative weight until much later in. Like, we only got a bit more serious stuff with the team happening after Gamora got injured. And even then, like, I don't know, they were all still a little, you know, everyone's saying, oh, this is so serious, this is so serious, and everyone's fairly lighthearted aside from Adam Warlock. And he just comes off kind of psychotic because of that. It seems like no one else cares except for him, and he's, like, freaking the fuck out. So, I feel like the team didn't really come into its own until a little later into this, you know, mini story arc that we just read. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know Groot's going to be part of it, and he looks so cool. I love the idea of the little tree dude, and I want to see what happens with him. I want to know who betrays them. I want to know now what happens with this alternate timeline that they're in that's completely wrong. So they kind of dropped all these bombs near the end in terms of story happening. You know, we find out everyone knows Mantis messed with their minds and all that. And that was cool. I just wish they had done that 3 issues earlier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a 3.
Okay, I'm going to... Oh, it's tough.
Yeah, Andy.
3.5, almost 4. 3.5. I think... There's a lot of really good things that they're dropping. They just didn't drop the hints for things fast enough. And I think we can write it off and say it's because they had to do the secret invasion stuff in the middle. And so that doesn't quite fit with the rest of the story because it has to be a tie-in because space is space and you're in space and that's where Skrulls are. So do it. But at the same time, even without that, I feel like the hints were coming in kind of slow. We're 6 issues in. I no fucking clue still who the hell this Major Victory guy is, and I don't know who Starhawk is. I never knew who Starhawk was before. I have no pre-knowledge of Starhawk. I just know that Starhawk shows up out of nowhere, and that's like it. And I don't know. Maybe it's just the not knowing. Maybe it's just that. But all of that said, these things look like they tie together really well. Eventually, like, it all feels like it has a purpose. Like, it doesn't feel... If you're going to make these points this disparate, there's a reason that they're all there. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't feel like this many disparate pieces are happenstance. I just wish that it came together, or some part of something was revealed sooner for a reason of the thing... Some part of it, please, could I see before the end of the first trade? So, yeah, 3.5. I mean, I think the fact that we didn't even talk about the art at all kind of speaks about the art. It's just kind of good art. I liked it. It was nice. I really like the way Cosmo looks. But it's kind of good art. It's just good art. 3.5. The thing with Drax killing everybody was fucking sick. I don't think we talked about that enough because... He straight up just murdered everybody because it was just the most immediate solution to the problem. Kill everything. And you're Drax. Why not? Just kill everything. Fuck it.
Yeah, I think if I give this a real objective rating and I rated just these 6 issues, I wouldn't give it a 5. I would probably give it like a 3.5.
Yeah.
Because these are slow and you have to really like... Say, okay, I can see what they're doing here with this Skrull thing and think, okay, well, I can see you kind of have to have a little bit of faith in the writers to really tie everything together. So, yeah, I think these 6 issues are probably a 3.5, but I think the series as a whole really is like 5.
And, you know, honestly, it's only 28 issues. It wouldn't take that long to read the whole thing in one sitting. Like, I read the first 6 issues, and it took me, like, 45 minutes, you know? And I want to read the rest of them. I do. It seems like a good run, and it's only 28 issues. It's good when there's that small commitment for it, you know? It's not like, I want to read Wonder Woman. What number is it on? 658. Fuck. You know, so I probably will end up finishing reading this one. I'm hoping I do, anyway. Okay. So that's it for this week, right? Yes. Yes. Okay. That's it for this week. That wraps up our host choice arc, which is one of Irony, because that is every arc, except for the next one. Boom! Look at that, how I made it host choice, because the future won't be. So we put a poll on the Facebook. It's still up. You can still go. We just want to know what of, like, these 10 ideas that we had that you guys want to listen to. And somebody said that they really want to listen to a series called DC's Letdowns, which is Identity Crisis, Prelude to Infinite Crisis, and Final Crisis. So we picked Identity Crisis because I think it's a big letdown. I think it's one of the things that destroyed modern comics, but we'll talk about that when we get there. And then we're going to do Prelude to Infinite Crisis because that's the thing that straight up made me stop reading comics. We're going to skip Infinite Crisis because aside from interdimensional wackiness, I think a lot of it's just, you know, people punching things really hard, and there's not going to be a whole lot we could talk about with it.
Wait, is Identity Crisis, or is Infinite Crisis the one where Superboy punches reality?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure.
I think these three are going to be three complain fests, but I think Infinite Crisis would be nothing about how it would just be an hour of us talking about all the different ways that Superboy is horrible.
Okay.
And stupid. So I think we're going to skip that one, and we're just going to go straight to Final Crisis.
I think Final Crisis has some redeeming qualities.
Yes, and I think Final Crisis, I mean, it's Grant Morrison, right? Even if you read a whole book and don't know what the fuck is going on, you can still talk about stuff. And if you don't believe us, you can go back and listen to our episode about the filth.
Yeah.
It's a whole comic of you don't know what the fuck is going on, but you can still talk about it for like an hour and a half, oddly enough. So yeah. Final Crisis, Prelude to Crisis, but next week is Identity Crisis. Identity Crisis, it's a mini-series from 2000-something. I don't know. If you want to get a link directly to it, though, like, if you want to just click on a button and it's going to go, boom, this is the Amazon page where you buy the comic, you can get there by going to our website, www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. And then you can click on the button that says Future Shows. And then it'll come up. It'll say, boom, Future Shows, DC Letdowns. First one on the left will be Identity Crisis. Click on the little link below that says Amazon. Bam, takes you to buy exactly what we are going to be reading. And if you just want to ask a little bit more about it ahead of time, you don't know, still want to share, I don't know, whatever. Or you just want to say hi, you can send us an email. And what's your email address, David?
That would be atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Boom. And please follow us on the social medias, like the Twitter and the Facebook. At both of them, we are facebook.com/APSupercast or twitter.com/APSupercast. AP Supercast, just find us with that. I'm sure you'll find us somewhere. No probs. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah, locking it back in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Say hi. Subscribe. Talk to us. We'll talk back. I promise. I will say hi back. I won't leave you hanging, bro.
We're friendly.
What's the female version of bro? I was gonna say bros and bras, but I didn't think that was right.
Nope.
No, I don't think that's correct.
Is it lady bro?
Oh God, no! Never call me lady bro.
Okay, we'll figure this out off air and report back next week. So until then, everybody, goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.
It's bitches. But that's derogatory, so you can't use it.